everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Fire Wilson, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of super yachting is Katia Dambowski.
Hi everyone, it's me again.
Yeah, back, your second Boat Briefing appearance. How's it feel to be back?
I mean, it's an honour. I'm trying to pretend like you actually want me here, but once again, it's because Stuart is cruising through a fjord, Steele's on holiday, and Caroline is quite busy with the magazine this week. So I've stepped into our faithful old podcast cupboard to pick up the slack.
Oh, no, we definitely want you here. You're a glam addition to the podcast.
Thank you.
For those of you who maybe missed your debut a couple of weeks ago, can you tell us what it is that you do at Boat?
I am the online yachts editor, which basically means that I try and cover everything yachty that comes through online and a little bit in print as well. But mostly day to day, it is the news.
What's the best part of your job, apart from obviously working with me on a daily basis?
Yeah, that's the highlight, obviously. She's my direct line manager, everyone, just to give some context to this podcast. But I think writing exclusive stories is quite cool, and getting to travel a lot is always fun. Shipyard visits and sea trials, probably my number one fave thing about the job.
What's the worst part? Me again.
There is no worst part. It's all good. You take the good bits from it. If you like what you do a lot, there's no real bad bits.
Obviously. Well, and obviously another highlight, being in the podcast cupboard. But last week, we were actually both in Monaco, but for different reasons. What took you to Monaco?
Well, I was at the Monaco Energy Boat Challenge. And if you know me in real life, you'll know that I love this event and won't stop talking about it. And actually, Sophia is trying not to laugh right now because she's sick to death of hearing me talk about the Monaco Energy Boat Challenge. But I love it. I think it's such a pioneering event from the Yacht Club de Monaco. It really aims to bring young people together from around the world to pioneer alternative fuel sources and input those on small prototype boats. And these boats literally are held together with glue and tape, but they actually probably race them. Like, they go out into the waters of Monaco and race
around. Yeah, how far do they go? Because I was obviously in Monaco and saw some of it kind of from the sidelines, and it's relatively hectic.
Yeah. So,
there was a lot of loud music. There was a lot of kind of spanners and sticky tape and various different, I mean, I think boat in some cases would be a kind of favourable term, but how far do they actually go out in water?
I think it's just literally outside around the port, but then I think there is also an endurance test which takes them a little bit further, and also a speed test. There's different kind of tests involved, but I mean, it is teenagers, or you know, teenagers, young 20-year-olds building boats, so it does of course get a little bit hectic, but it's such a great atmosphere. Like, I think it's really nice seeing all those young people at the yacht club. There's a lot of different people from the industry there. You get a lot of shipyards there. This year in particular, there was loads of people from Ocean Co, Ferretti Group, San Lorenzo, Lursen. As you said, you caught a bit of the energy because you were also at the yacht club, but for a slightly different event.
Yeah, had a slightly different vibe the event I was running. So I was upstairs at the yacht club while Katia was kind of in the water, as it were. I was fortunate enough to be out there hosting a round table in partnership with Cooks and Adventures, and it was looking at how superyacht expedition companies can add value to superyacht charterers and owners. We had a really brilliant lineup of 12 industry experts. I was slightly concerned about how I was going to control them all, because there were some fairly punchy names on the table, but actually everyone was quite well behaved in the end. Clearly my steely stare kept them under control. And it was also great to be joined by Henry Cookson, who of course is the founder of Cookson Adventures and has just done remarkable things all over the world. Nick Davies, who's the MD, and Neil Bateman, who's the head of yachts. It was a really interesting topic for discussion, because I think we've all seen, you know, this huge wave of demand, particularly by younger owners and charterers, of really wanting to go out there and do different things with their yachts. And obviously with that, there comes huge safety implications. And also a kind of need for additional resource. You know, your standard captain and charter broker are not necessarily in a position to show you an amazing time in Alaska or Antarctica or Papua New Guinea. And actually, you do know if you're going to do it, I think that's Henry Cookson's big thing, if you're going to do it properly. And the way to do it properly is having the right experts in the right place to really make the most of an adventure. But obviously that then comes with a bit of a rub, because something I hadn't really considered before is that obviously if you're a charter breaker, you probably have a great relationship with your client, but maybe you see them for lunch a couple of times a year, you have some phone calls, you get feedback. Whereas these expedition companies, more often than not, are actually going on these trips with the clients. So they're there, they know their kids, they're seeing firsthand. And I think that's where the charter brokers get kind of a bit hesitant about sort of almost handing their clients over, and it's how you can kind of build that relationship of trust, because, you know, these companies do need to work together moving forwards. But yeah, there's a lot of discussion around that, and how you can make it work, and then also a lot of discussion around how you do the expense of it, because similarly, you know, the charter structure is very kind of rigid in it. You know, you have your charter fee, you have your APA, it's all very upfront and very kind of clear, which is brilliant, and that's why it works so well as a format. But similarly, if you're doing expeditions, the prices can fluctuate a lot, and if you suddenly, you know, one of the examples we're talking about, you know, a trip had suddenly doubled in price, but yeah, if you add another helicopter and you add so many more hours in the helicopter and you add this and you add that, it's very quick for these prices, and how do you manage kind of client expectations around that? So yeah, it was a really lovely, you know, really interesting discussion, and I think hopefully very beneficial for Cooks and Adventures, and I think also gave the kind of industry experts, you know, gave them something to think about and go back and talk to their companies about how it's all going to move forward. So yeah, it was great, and also had a lovely lunch, so winning all round. It's great.
Yeah, that sounds really, really engaging and interesting. Were you strategically sat next to people that you could kick under the table if they got a bit too loud?
Yes, I won't name names, but one person to his face said he was sat next to me expressing for that reason. But no kicking was required, and actually very few evil glares were required. No evil glares were required. Everyone was actually very well behaved. But no, it was great. I mean, it was a bit of a whirlwind trip to Monaco. I obviously saw you a bit, but I was there for kind of 40 hours, and we also did, my colleague Lottie Harris from our commercial team, and we kind of tried to also use it, catch up with lots of different people. So it was kind of back-to-back meetings, round table, a couple of glasses of rosé in celebration, and then a flight
A couple of glasses of rosé, is that what we're calling it?
Yeah, we're calling it a couple.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Don't be fooled, podcast listeners.
And also got to eat my own weight and steak at La Bionda, which is a Monaco must for me.
Yeah.
Start thinking about indeed. It a long time in advance.
Yeah, the chips are so good there, the way they double fry them, I think, isn't it?
And I think it's also just to eat somewhere in Monaco where you don't feel like you're potentially bankrupting yourself.
Yes.
Full marks.
Big plus.
Big fan of that place. But before you're in Monaco, you also went to Montenegro. How was that?
Yeah, it was brilliant, actually. I had a very lovely time at Porto Novi, which is just opposite the bay from Porto Montenegro.
Yeah, so I went to Porto Novi, and I'm trying to remember which year it was now. It was immensely hot. It was when there was that heat wave across Europe, and they called it something ridiculous, like Lucifer or something. I can't remember what it was. I'm not going to have to Google what it was.
Was that a Montenegran thing, or just a European thing?
I think it's
thing?
That all across kind of Central Europe, and it was like, Lucifer is coming.
But who named it Lucifer? That's ludicrous.
I don't know who named it Lucifer. And I'm now going to have to Google
That's
whether
so
it was
so dramatic.
Lucifer. But it was immensely hot, and it was still very much a construction site. So I've got a lovely photo of me somewhere in a kind of hard hat, stood on what is now presumably one of the berths. But I've never managed to go back, so I'm really interested to hear what it's like.
Yeah, it was brilliant. I liked it. It's kind of the quieter sibling of Porto Montenegro. It's very classy and understated. And it's actually home to one and only, and I think it's actually Europe's first one and only, which is quite cool.
Yeah. Did you get to stay in the one and only?
No. I mean, we went in and there was a press conference in the one and only. But it was fantastic. It was in one of the villas.
Look, don't touch.
Exactly, yeah. But they had a little party there afterwards in the villa. And it was really, really nice.
But you were there, then I saw, obviously, you touched on this last time when you were with Stuart, but obviously you have an alter ego. Is that how we refer to it? I don't know. You are the yacht writer on Instagram.
I am the yacht writer. I'm the yacht writer everywhere, not just on Instagram.
Which, as discussed, as your manager is great, because if I ever need to know where you are, you post kind of 24/7, so... It's pretty easy to track you down. But I did see on that, there were some pretty wacky photos of kind of people in jumpsuits. And I wasn't quite sure what was going on. So, I mean, I don't think you've actually said why you're out there, but I need to know more about the jumpsuit.
Yeah, I'm surprised the jumpsuit is what you remembered, because there's also like a fire show, a light show, like a live graffiti performance. But
just the jumpsuit. Just
really
the jumpsuit.
Keep in mind, she's very really fashion resonated. Focused. Okay. But I was there for the preview of Dominator's Illumin M35, which is like a very slick 11-meter day boat. Really cool. It's something a bit different for Dominator. They don't really make those kind of day boats, from what I understand. But the way they had used the space was absolutely phenomenal. So they had this exterior aft deck and then a cabin indoors with a full-size berth, and then there was a hedge which had smart glass, so you could actually like press a button and the glass would go opaque or transparent depending on, you know.
Wow, that strikes me as like fraught with danger.
Yeah, probably, but I thought it was quite cool. I mean, yeah, as design features go, I think, yeah, they'd put a lot into this cabin, into the smart glass. But yeah, speaking of design, I hear you've got a little announcement for us.
Yeah, so, I mean, actually, we're recording this podcast on Tuesday morning, but by the time it's gone out, I will be able to say that SDF tickets, Super Design Festival tickets, are now on sale, and it is also, we're delighted to say, returning to Kitzbühel in Austria. So, obviously, it was in Cortina. I keep on getting my years confused. So, it was in Cortina this year because it's a January-February event, and next year it will be returning to Kitzbühel on the 28th to the 30th of January 2024. It was great. It was back, I think it was last in Kitzbühel in 2017, and it's such a beautiful location. I love it, so I'm really excited that it's going back there. It will follow the kind of traditional format, so the Boat Design and Innovation Awards will be on the opening evening. Then there'll be the sort of day of talks, a big party somewhere still to be announced, and then another kind of morning of talks before, of course, the famous Ski Cup. The lovely Lucy, who's our acting features editor, is just in the process of kind of trying to track down speakers and get us all to line up people and be useful. But some of the topics that we're looking to touch on are, is it time to embrace AI? Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about it in the industry recently, so that's definitely going to be a kind of hot topic for discussion. We're also going to look at Beyond Teak and what the options might be there and what some of the alternatives are that are coming into industry. Another one which I didn't really know existed, and this probably shows a naivety on my part, but we've currently entitled it How to Grow Your Own Soup Yacht Interiors, which is basically using biodesign, so essentially plants to grow materials is my understanding, but it sounds super interesting. Do you know anything about that?
Only as far as, you know, we wrote a feature last year in the mag about growing plants, but more for eating, but you're talking about growing plants for actually using the materials.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, no, don't know much about this. But I think trees on board are becoming quite popular. I'm seeing a lot of concepts with this whole kind of tree growing through the deck design. So I kind of think it's a natural.
Yeah, I think this is more like bacteria.
Oh, right.
Growing stuff, I think.
Oh, right.
I need to do some more research on this.
Naivety on my part as well.
No one quote me on this, but yeah, I think it's more that essentially, as you know, generally, I don't, this isn't just unique to the super industry, as we try and find new materials that are more sustainable.
Yeah, okay.
Apparently, I think bacteria and things like that are the way forwards.
Well.
But anyway, there's going to be some experts that are talking about it.
Yeah, get me into 5 front row tickets for this
one.
Because
we clearly need to. Yeah. Clearly need to understand a bit more about what's going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's great that it's going to be back in Kitzbühel. Yeah. Lots of opportunity for certain members of the industry to wear their lederhosen, I'm sure they're delighted.
Sure, they'll jump at the opportunity. Yeah, I mean, we're in Austria.
Yeah, there's always a few. So yeah, if you like people in lederhosen, it's the event for you. And also lots of Austrian food. What's first on your list, Katia? I know you like to sample local delicacies when you're away.
I do, yes. Yeah. Probably Sackertort. Do you know what that is?
No.
It's like a kind of, I think it's from Vienna. It's a very moist chocolate cake. I think they make it with like a meringue base, so like whipped egg whites. And then you assemble it with this like apricot jam between them. So you've kind of got the sweetness of the fruit and then this really rich chocolate. And then it's got like a really crispy outer layer of, I guess, like a chocolate icing thing. So it's like kind of cracks when you put into it. Very satisfying.
You're selling it to me.
Yeah. What about you?
I'm just quite excited about schnitzel.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit more basic, isn't
it?
I feel like now you've gone with quite a kind of cultured answer. I just think Austria. I've got lederhosen and schnitzel. So
yeah.
I've just gone. It's gone for all the cliches.
Yeah, but I mean, when we were in Fort Lauderdale, you went for like, we were talking about barbecue food, and you went for like a really nice cut of steak, and I was getting quite into my description of the kind of hot dog that I'd quite like to eat. So, swings around.
You did then actually go and find said hot
Yeah,
dog.
No, I did twice. I had 2 hot dogs.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's not long till Fort Lauderdale as well, so.
Bringing on, counting down the days, guys.
And 2 other quick bits of housekeeping while we're on it. First of all, as a reminder, listening, to get your nominations in for the Boat Design and Innovation Awards, which we obviously are going to be at the Super Design Festival and the World Super Awards. I appreciate these might both seem like a long time away, but I know the judges this year are really keen to see as many yachts in person as possible. Obviously, during COVID, they kind of made it work, seeing them remotely, but I don't think anything substitutes for them actually being able to get on board and have a proper feel for these yachts. And obviously, yacht show season, and Monaco, Fort Lauderdale, as just mentioned, tends to be really great opportunities for the judges to be there and get on board. So the sooner that nominations are submitted, the better. I can't believe we're already kind of talking about World Super Awards 2024, but if you've got anything, what are your early shouts? What do you think is going to be in there?
I mean, I think it'll be, as ever, quite a stiff competition, but if I had to pick one, you know, the new Aberking flagship, Proteus Ferris. Yeah. I'm just crazy about the design. She looks like she's been dipped in oil. She's so sleek and glossy. And I read somewhere that the shell plates have actually been welded together, like laser welded, and the anchor pockets are below the waterline, almost in the keel, to keep her profile absolutely smooth and unbroken, which sounds absolutely insane. So excited for that.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's hope that she gets put forward.
Yeah.
You know what that I'm really excited to see, and we had a brief discussion about this yesterday. I'm not sure whether she might not be a WSA contender, but I'm really excited to see it's the 4 to 6.5 meter Art Explorer. I think we've spoken about her quite a lot on the podcast before because Stuart obviously interviewed her owner. But she's going to be a floating art gallery. So I think she's going to really push the boundaries as to what a super yacht means and how you can use a super yacht. She's being built by Admiral, and we think she's due to launch relatively soon. So watch this space. But be interesting to see whether she is put forward for anything in terms of awards. And my second bit of housekeeping, it's in case you're a bit of self-promotion here, is in case you missed it, I did a wonderful interview with the founders of DKT Artwork, Stephen Shawn, which went live last week. It's 25 years since they did their first project with Winch, which was a yacht called Soulmates. And they have some brilliant anecdotes about basically building bespoke artwork in the super yacht world. They obviously work kind of across the super yacht world and interiors and restaurants as well, but we obviously particularly focused on some of their super yacht projects. I mean, I've seen some of their pieces before. Phoenix 2 obviously has a couple of standout pieces. The staircase on Here Comes the Sun is another kind of amazing example as to what they can do. But it was a really interesting insight because I had no idea really how they worked or how they came about or who came up with the ideas. So it's there if you want to go and have a listen.
Yeah, sounds incredible what they're up to. Making those really bespoke pieces.
Right, so shall we move on to brokerage picks? What has caught your eye? What's on the shopping list this week, Katia?
Well, I'm really excited about the brand new Heesin Sparta joining the market. So she's exactly the kind of big boat that I like, where the design is actually quite sporty. So you can't immediately tell that she's a 67 metre. And also, I feel like this is the kind of thing that you don't like, but the kind of thing that I love. Is that every deck is designed around a different element, like water, earth, and air. I feel like you like quite minimal boats, but for me, the wackier the better. But then this is actually a Winch design, so you know it will be nicely finished.
Yeah.
And she's listed with Arken and asking €99 million.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it'll be beautiful. I do know, you're right. I love just a
You like beach. Toned down, pared back.
Yeah, nice neutrals. Beach house vibe interior.
Yeah, that's not me.
No, I know. So I get a lot of stick for it in the office.
You do. So what's your brokerage pick? Is it a beach club, floating beach house in the water?
It's not a floating beach club. It's quite a long way from a floating beach club, but I do think it's really interesting. So it's Project Ocean, which is the first hull in the Arxen 85 range of aluminium expedition yachts. So it's obviously slight British interest, which, as you know, is another love of mine. So she features design by Humphreys Design with an interior by Design Unlimited, who of course are both based in the UK, and she's also due to be launched from Arxen facilities on the Isle of Wight later this year. But basically what is really cool about this yacht is they are kind of pushing the boundaries in terms of sustainability. So she's got a hybrid propulsion system, including a state-of-the-art stable lighting technology, which means that emissions are reduced and noise is at a minimum and vibrations are low. Also, because she's aluminium built, it means she'll be fully recyclable at the end of her life cycle. And the material is already made from 40% recycled content, which I think is a pretty impressive figure in the industry. To go with all of that, she's also is a true little explorer yacht. So she's got a 7,000 nautical range, the ability to switch to low emissions, so she basically runs completely silently. And she also has a virtual anchor, so she can leave no trace wherever she goes. She is on the market for slightly less than your pick, actually. So she's on the market with Northam Johnson asking £10.995 million. I'm really excited about what Arxen are doing. They've obviously launched their other 85 a couple of months ago now. So it'll be cool to start to see these, hopefully going around the world and also doing some research as well as they go.
Yeah, I mean, they're very distinctive looking, so I'm sure we won't miss them if we see them around.
So we're going to move on to the proper news in a minute. But in the meantime, you had a bit of a scoop this week, which we felt should get some additional airtime ahead of the main news. Tell us more.
I did get a good scoop, although I would say it is proper news, Sophia. I'll try not to take that too personally. This is a brilliant scoop on the new build 70 metre CRN. So it's Project Thunderball. So it's CRN for the build, Norter Design for the interior, and Rypak on the exteriors. And she was sold by Wyco and entered construction just at the start of this year. So this was an exclusive for us. I've been working on this for quite a long time because there's obviously so many moving parts and so many parties, and getting in touch with the owner to ask about their new project is, it's fun asking owners about their what they've got going on, but you always are treading quite carefully because you don't want to.
And am I right in thinking that this owner has previously only owned sailing yachts, so this is its first foray into motor yachts?
I think he has owned motor yachts before, but not at this size or scale. But okay. Yeah, he's a sailing yacht guy to his core. Yeah. So Thunderball have like little sailing yachts that follow alongside the mothership, basically. So yeah, and she's really cool. You've seen her, haven't you?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
She's very, very retro.
I do read what you do.
Yeah, you do. Not the proper news, obviously, but she does read it. Very, very like vintage, isn't she?
Yeah. No, I'm excited to
I'm
see.
So excited for this.
Do you know why the name Thunderball? So the Bond.
I don't know, I'm afraid. No, didn't get that far with that. But yeah, so now to explain to me that colour is a real starring role on this boat, which is again quite different. You don't normally see boats that are super colourful, and he was saying that every cabin is designed around a different colour, and the owner was saying that exactly what we have at our house at home is all these different colours in the different rooms. So they wanted to translate that into their yacht. So yeah, very excited for this one.
So speaking of colour actually leads us quite neatly into the first official news story, not proper news story, of the week. And this is that the first unit in the Gumbo 80 series, which is known as Highland Fling 18, has begun sea trials close to Gumbo's construction facilities in France. Commissioned by an experienced yachtsman and avid sailor, I think the name will be a clue for quite a few people as to who that is, the 24.7 metre catamaran is optimised for racing with competitive, ultra-lightweight construction, with a pre-preg carbon fibre structure and honeycomb Nomex core. If anyone understands that, then four points to them. I'm not entirely convinced that I do. The mast is also positioned further aft for an improved sail plan. The semi-custom yacht is capable of exceeding true wind speeds at just 6 knots, and it's suspected to be one of the fastest cruising catamarans of its size, according to the shipyard. Her racing team joined the yacht for sea trials to put her performance to the test, and the yacht is expected to make her racing debut at the Maxi Yacht Rolex Cup in Porto Cervo in September. A second Gumbo 80 is currently under construction and will launch in the summer of 2024, but this one has been designed with family cruising in mind. So it'll be interesting to see how the two differ.
Yeah, it's interesting that they've got the race team on board for the sea trial. I think that's really cool. It means that they're really looking at the performance and how well she's going to race.
Well, I think this, it's not the owner's first rodeo, so I guess
exactly, yeah.
I guess he knows what he wants and he knows the people around him who can tell him whether it's achieving it.
Yeah.
She also, I don't think I mentioned, she also has this very cool red hull, which is a nice link to our 40th anniversary issue, because 40th anniversary is, of course, Ruby. And that issue goes on sale on Thursday. I know Stuart's plugged it quite heavily, so we won't go into too much detail. But Katya, separately to all the kind of brilliant content that's in the magazine, you've also pulled a piece together looking at 10 of boat's most iconic covers over the past four decades. Can you reveal some of the yachts that made the cut? Is there one that stands out to you?
Yeah, I mean, there were some gorgeous ones. I can't possibly pick one, but we had Octo. Obviously, that photograph is so iconic with those really sharp lines and angular profile. And Scout, you know, she's got all that yellow detailing and obviously, again, that really, really recognisable silhouette. And then some icons like Octopus and Motor A. There was one sailing yacht which made the cover, which was Black Pearl. But I can actually imagine that this next news story would make a fantastic cover boat somewhere down the line because she's also very striking looking. So I'm talking about the 34 metre custom Baltic 111 superyacht. She was seen for the first time as she emerged from the construction shed at Baltic Yacht's waterside facility in Jakobstad, Finland. Is Jakobstad, right? It's not Jakobstad.
I mean, my Finnish isn't top-notch, Katya, right. So say it with confidence.
Sorry, I'm podcast sure listeners, yeah, say it with confidence. So she's called Raven, and she's a performance model, which is one of the most extreme yachts Baltic Yachts has ever built. That's according to Baltic. She's designed as a foil-assisted, ultra-lightweight superyacht and will be used primarily for day sailing, while also being equipped to undertake high-speed, long-distance passages. So her first images reveal a curved beak-like bow, two T-shaped foils, and an 8-metre-long tubular bowsprit. Weight saving was central to the yacht design, and she has been custom-built with the lightest possible carbon and Nomex again, combination. We should really probably learn a bit
more about this. Quickly Google what Nomex is.
So initial sea trials will take place just close to the yard, and it will see Raven sailing without her foils. These will then be fitted before undertaking a second round of sea trials, and the full specifications on speed and range have not yet been disclosed, but I think we can expect some pretty good speeds from a foil-assisted ultra-lightweight super yacht, right?
Yeah, I mean, we'll put the link in the podcast description as usual, but it's worth taking a look at. She really is quite something.
Yeah, I mean, she will actually probably launch next week, so if you listen to this any time in the next few days, you could expect the launch story up soon as well.
So finally, we have that the 111.8-metre Explorer super yacht, NB-724, which is now transmitting on AIS as Renaissance, has been spotted conducting sea trials in the Vigo estuary in northern Spain. The seven-deck super yacht will be Freyr's flagship and is the largest private yacht built in Spain and one of the largest super yachts under construction in the world. The shipyard normally specialises in commercial ships, but it has built a private yacht in the past, the 73.6-metre Nea. Renaissance has been designed inside and out by Bannerberg and Rau, with naval architecture by Madden Tenick AS. Amenities on board the 6,950 DT yacht have not yet been disclosed, but images seem to indicate that she'll have a generous after swimming pool, a helipad on the bow, and a small jacuzzi later forward on what could potentially be the owner's deck. Katya, I imagine you'll be doing more snooping on that in the weeks to come as the pictures come in.
Yeah, I've been snooping around like crazy because the pictures are actually, there's quite a few of them, but because she's having sea trials in quite a public area, but just getting hold of those pictures has been tripping me up slightly.
Do you not have friends hanging out in the Vigo estuary in northern Spain?
No, not quite.
Sorry, you need to expand your network. Yeah. So last but not least, we'll move on to the data this week, which as ever is powered by GoPro, our award-winning market intelligence service. And this week we thought we would use it to have a little look at the numbers from June in the brokerage market. Katya, you've put this together. Take it.
Yeah, well, I've put it together from Gabby's article, so I can't take full credit. But according to the article, there were 41 sales in June, including one new build. And that new build was the first 40-metre Mangusta Maxi Open 132E, which is sold by TWW. And it's worth noting that the prices of the new builds are not included in the total value of sales. So that number is 329.1 million euros. That's the total value of sales. And then the average sales value was 9.7 million euros. Can you guess whether that was a decline or an increase on the previous month?
I'm going to say it's a decrease because ARPO sold in May, which would have sort of skewed the numbers.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a significant decline, actually, with multiple nine-figure deals bringing the average to 22.7 million euros in May.
Yeah.
There were 39 new listings, and again, that was a decrease, down 38% from last month's total value of 63 newly listed yachts. The new listings value was 450.8 million euro, and the average new listing value was 12.9 million euro. There were 62 price drops and 61.4 million euro in the total price drop value. That's quite high. I wasn't expecting that to be so high.
Yeah, that does seem high. It'd be interesting to compare that. Well, maybe not month to month, but it'd be interesting to compare. We're obviously going to have our H1 results coming together quite soon. It'll be interesting because I just don't really remember there being any price drops last year. And it seems in terms of emails that you see coming in, there's definitely a bit of realignment going on in the market.
But I mean, I guess we are in the mid-season now. Yeah. So maybe people are just trying to get their hands. Any guesses on the most expensive sale in June, since you got the most expensive sale of the month before?
Oh, sold. I could look at the script, but I'm gonna be honest. I can't think what sold in June.
It was Rocket.
Okay.
So the 60.4-metre Fed ship. So she was sold by Marwood and Rupert Nelson at Burgess, and the owner was represented by Tom George of One Water Yachts. And then the most expensive yacht to join the market this month was Amaryllis. That is the 68.4-metre from Abiking Rasmussen. She's currently asking 99 million euro with Moravia Yachting, which is coincidentally the same price as Sparta, which is obviously smaller but much newer from Houston.
Yeah, I was going to say, when was Amaryllis delivered? Friend was crew on her, but that was a long time ago that he was. Feels like a long time ago that he was crew on her.
Yeah, sorry, my trivia doesn't make sense that far. Sorry.
Okay.
So my feedback from this podcast is get more friends in the Vigo estuary and know exactly to the month when Amaryllis was delivered. So
And I think we also need to do some homework on by design.
Yes, and Nomex.
And Nomex. So for next podcast,
we'll come back all clued up on that, guys.
We'll all hit our KPIs, yep. And we'll be ready. Well, thank you so much for joining, Katia. I'm sure you'll be back on the pod again soon.
Yeah, I hope so.
And thank you to everyone for listening. This podcast has been mixed and produced by the wonderful Naomi Wilson. And don't forget to like and subscribe.